welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Afternoon, Ray. How are we doing, my friend?
Good afternoon. I'm exceptionally well because the Easter holidays are over. My two lovely young sons are in school. I paced myself for 2 weeks, but I think it ended up being about 20 days. So, you know, the last few days has been a test.
So
I'm all good. Sun is shining.
good. Well, great to see you. It's funny, isn't it, when you get holidays, because it just disrupts your pattern of stuff, doesn't it? So it's all good, but it almost feels like it's not a holiday when you got kids. Like you just want to do the other stuff and the kids stuff. So I'm sure we've all felt a bit of that. Well, look, I'm genuinely excited again about this episode. I think when we spoke about the different things we might do, one of those was the Coach's Voices ones. We've had one of those already, which was great. We've had some more coming now, and obviously we've had more over the last few weeks or month or so, which is brilliant. I think we picked up some good ones for today, a bit different. And I guess the theme is here just to maybe play it and have a chat around it and see where we land on some stuff. Does that sound all right?
Yeah. That sounds great. And I think... Yeah, the breadth of them, they're quite different, aren't they? So it's kind of three episodes in one, I would say. So, all good.
Well, when I listened to them, each one was like, in my head, got me thinking about things. And actually, I've listened to some other podcasts recently that they're kind of topics as well. So, like, in some ways, old conversations, but they're always topical again. And the sands of kind of opinions kind of change a little bit. So, we'll have a chat about that. But just more broadly, everyone listening, just thanks again. Our numbers have been fantastic with regards to downloads and views and stuff like that. So it's really good. Obviously, we're doing something right. We had the coaches roundtable conversation, which I really loved last time. I thought that was brilliant. Some good chats around that, and we've had some good feedback from that, which is great. And I know we've got another one going to come up on those soon. So hopefully people are enjoying the episodes and getting something out of them for them and their players. Please remember to check us out on the YouTube channel if you want to. If you can't stand my face, which I totally understand, then stick to the audio only version, which is absolutely understandable. But some of them lend themselves better to, the watching as well. But most in general, if you just pick up the audio, you're going to be fine as well. So either's good. Have you been enjoying them, Ray?
Yeah, very much. Very much. Yeah. It's quite nice. I quite like the crescendo of doing them. But then as soon as this finishes, I quite like the process where we go, kind of go back in again to find something cool. So, it is enjoyable turning over those rocks. And the viewers, the downloads and all that sort of stuff, it just validates it, doesn't it? It's really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's the reason for doing it. I mean, for me personally, well, actually, it's not the reason for doing it, if I'm honest. The reason for doing it is the fact I learn so much from doing it, which is great. But if other people listening, they're obviously learning as well and enjoying it. It's going to come back again. So, the podcast has always been built on the fact that we want to try and make, hopefully the plan and coaching environment for coaches and players better by sharing some ideas and thoughts. And that's what we're doing here again. So, and there's no more powerful thoughts than getting the thoughts of the actual coaches or players themselves. So that leads us quite nicely, I think, into probably what will be our first question. So it worked last time doing this. So I'm just going to play it down it's not particularly long, but I'll play the question down. Then maybe, because it's come to you, Ray, maybe you want to talk a bit, or do you want to talk about it first? I don't know if you want to talk about the actual question. It's the one from Zach, the half-time one, or do we play it first?
Let's play it, because it's quite specific, isn't it?
We'll play it, then we'll chat about it more broadly, then where it comes from, then we'll have a chat about the question itself, because I've got lots of questions for you on this. Okay, here we go.
Hi, Scott and Ray. I have a question. What advice would you give to coaches on how to go about halftime talks when they are being successful, when the team is playing very well in the first half and you know adjustments are coming from the opposition? How do you prepare for that without changing too much what is already working?
It's a good question, isn't it?
It's a great question from Zach. It's really good. Like, it's a great question. He sounds very composed and calm and collected, so I think his talks will be fine, to be honest with you. But very different from one of my ones. But I guess, first of all, I guess I don't know how much you know Zach or anything at all about him, or what you might know about where it might have come from. So that'd be good. And then before we get into the question, I would just like to ask you, Ray, more broadly, because I think it's important to kind of set this, like, how important are team talks in the first place, halftime? That may be something to answer towards the end or first, but before we get into the specifics. But the Zach background first, if you know anything about
Yeah,
that.
there's definitely to your point, there's definitely a broad version of this and a really narrow version of this, which Zach's kind of gone down that there about something really specific. In many ways, it's the best problem he's ever had because the things are obviously going really quite well, and in a way, he's trying to shake it up a bit. But look, more broadly, I guess I had a chap called Eamon Devlin do a webinar with me a few years back now, and Eamon's also Irish, but properly went down the halftime team talk rabbit hole from a psych point of view, how much you should talk, how much you should let them talk, and a huge amount of recommendations are around that. So if anyone wants to go down this rabbit hole, reach out to me on socials or whatever, and I can dig that out. So it's a broad topic. It's one of them that I think is it's become one of those niche topics that we're coming across a lot, where people are really burrowing down into the depth of whether it's substitutes or half time or referees or in possession or out of possession or whatever little niche that people are becoming expert in. So yeah, I broad half time. Broadly now, but before I get to Zach's stuff, I often think we look back more than we look forward as coaches. We kind of transcribe the first half a little bit like what pundits do, I guess. Whereas I think if we were really to step back and go, well, what would be most functional at halftime would probably be, yes, using the past to look forward. So using the first half as a point of reference and gathering up your whatever the references you might get from your team or the opposition's team or whatever else is going on. But it's got to be about how it takes you forward, I think. And so I've been part of as the lead guy and the background and the player of I don't know how many team talks. And I've forgotten most of them. So I think that tells you a lot. And a lot of people do say that as well. So yeah, I do think we, and that Any Given Sunday. Do you remember that movie, Any Given Sunday? That
Yeah, brilliant movie. Yeah, the whole
yeah,
rallying kind of thing. Al Pacino. Yeah,
yeah. Like those kind of things kind of pique coaches' interest because you want to be the kind of eye of that storm. You know what I mean? You want to be the guy giving the goosebumps or the girl giving the goosebumps in the changing room. But I'm not necessarily sure. I think if we fake that or we try to go after that, I think it's probably vastly inappropriate in most environments on most days. I think they're really one-off moments to be. So yeah, you keep them back for important moments, I think. With Zach, I know Zach for a number of years through my webinars. He gets involved in a lot of the courses and programs and stuff I run. Obviously, he's stateside, and it would be really, the next thing would be, well, give us a circumstance that you would use that in. I don't. Do you want to bat back some of the things I've said there, and before we get on to the
Well, I've
specifics?
got questions, I think, that I think like related to that, I love your thoughts on, and we can debate it a bit more maybe. But I think your point about actually a lot of the time, and I don't, is I'm looking back on the first half for most of my talk, and then I'm adding the last bit about what we're going to do now kind of thing. And maybe that's, maybe that's not the right way of going about it. Maybe it should be a lot more looking forward, But I guess there's the age and stage bit. But my biggest question, I think, is does it actually make a difference? What I'm saying, does it make a difference? I don't, and I'm not sure. It's a shame you can't have like the same game, isn't it? Like stop a half time, have one with the thing, one without it, and see what makes the difference. And maybe there's sometimes when it does, and maybe there's sometimes when it doesn't so much. And maybe there's lots of variables there that kind of mean it's not necessarily right or wrong. But it's all about marginal gains, isn't it? So I guess having the tools to be able to deliver an effective team talk, depending on the circumstances, that might be based on the age, the stage, the game, or whatever, the situation, is another collection of tools, isn't it, to have in your armory as an effective coach. And back to your point about kind of specialisms, and it does seem like we're going down a world where actually you're going to have maybe an overarching kind of manager. I mean, I'm talking at the probably top level now, but even maybe in grassroots, we might have the person leading it, and then under them you might have two, three, or four assistants, where you've got someone kind of looking at maybe team talks and individual stuff, someone looking at out possession, someone in possession. You can break these things down; they become more specialised. You want to counter that burning without being over analytical, do you? And it's trying to find that sweet spot between actually what's really effective and what just sounds like it might work but actually doesn't make a difference. But on Zach's point, let's get to him, because he said about leading at half time, which I thought was a great little extra part to that, because that's an important bit. And ironically, Ray, we played a game yesterday. We were 4-0 up at half time, and I'm only the support coach on the Sunday. Mark does much more of the dog work than I do for the Sunday team, a lot more than I do. But I thought I would add in my little bit towards the end and kind of said, look, guys, because we've got some big games coming up as well, in inverted commas, big games. I said, like at the end, look, boys, the game's not done, but we're comfortable. Think about how we want to play moving forward. Don't get lazy and whatever else, and let's just keep doing the right things. Roughly, I'm paraphrasing, that's roughly it. Anyway, the boys went out and conceded a goal straight away. I don't think that helped. I was reflecting on that last night, especially after Zach's thing, thinking, but I think that's where maybe I didn't help there, because we should have just stayed focused on the game, and write about the next game after that game, and talked about that. So I don't know, just there's so much in there that I don't know where you really start with it, but it's interesting to have that bit about where we are at half time in relation to the other team winning.
Yeah, look, it's
Oh, sorry, us winning. Sorry, I should say, if we're winning. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
yeah. So the feeling I get when I step in Zach's shoes is you're ahead in the game, you're quite comfortable in it, and you're also quite comfortable that the opposition isn't going to throw anything back at you in terms of a curve ball or a change of plan or anything like that. And I really like the question actually, because it shows that he's thinking about the development of his players rather than coasting to a victory, and he wants to. It feels like he wants to challenge them more. And as you say, there's a caveat in it all where if you send the wrong message, if the message turns your team into a bunch of complacent lads or lasses, it's sort of, yeah, it goes against it, and it can those environments can turn a little bit toxic if you're not careful. Like I say, in football, it's very easy to concede. In youth football, it's even easier to concede a random goal from anything, from a long punt or do you know what I mean, a mistake, a bounce, or a ricochet, whatever it might be. And suddenly momentum shifts, and the goal back turns into two goals back, and maybe you could even say, no offense, but maybe you could say, the root cause of this might have been the temperament of the messages at half time. But I appreciate he wants to do something. He wants to push the envelope, and he wants to. And look, this is one of them questions, I think, whereby you would love if all the listeners were on the online at the moment and going, well, I do this and I would do that,
Yeah,
because
sharing some
you know what I
ideas.
mean? Because it probably suits different things, probably suit different people. I've seen coaches try things before. Now, maybe now is the time where we try that, that formation we've had in our back pocket that we were going to change to. Or I've seen coaches talk about prioritizing keeping the ball rather than attacking, which I think that can bog you down a little bit into a bit of a no man's land. Like, what do? You keep the ball until you give it away. Like, what's the it's kind of like playing basketball with no hoops. So, and I was never really a fan of that necessarily. But in many ways, I think Zach is talking about putting conditions on his own team, constraints on his own team, to just try to elicit something from them.
Yeah.
Would it be best, and I'm hypothesizing here, would it be best if this wasn't done at half time, this was done in pre-season, where you go, do you know what? There'll be some games this year where we'll lose badly, and we'll try to do this. There'll be some games where we'll be winning quite comfortably. So maybe we should
Almost like
try.
scenarios.
Yeah, maybe so. And I'm just thinking out loud where messages, when they land in that moment, okay, because of this situation, we're doing so well. There's no way, there's no way back for them. So we're going to throw the cards up in the air and see what happens by switching everyone's position for the second half, because you know what I mean? And it kind of getting out of hand. Whereas I think if it was something you what if'd early on in the season, you know, I think most of us do that. You know, what if we're, what if the games are tight and, you know, we need to score, you know, maybe we'll do this or whatever the case. I kind of feel like then players are just reaching into their toolbox of stuff they already know.
Yeah.
Okay, right. You know, we're, I don't know, maybe we're gonna take a player off. I've seen that happen. One less player playing, so is that, you know, youth development or not? It's hard to say, but you know, I'm not sure there's a silver bullet answer from me, Zach. I'm afraid with this one, but I certainly think I certainly like the players in that situation as well.
Well, right, just so some extra points around it then, I think. How much of the team talk then, regardless of the situation with the game to the score, whatever else, should be, do you think should be coach led or player led? And is it more questions and player answers, or are we telling? And again, I know it may be different. Well, is it different from under 21s to under 60s? I mean, is it? I don't know. Like, should it always be questions first and see what the players think? And, you know, like back to the kind of the end of the given Sunday kind of thing. Is it, you know, maybe there's times for us being there and just and telling, and maybe there's times for listening, and maybe it's a combination of stuff. But what's your views kind of on how much maybe it could be player oriented and from coach oriented, just generally speaking?
There's a few questions in there, isn't there? I read something recently, really quite recently. I think it was from basketball. I think it was from the NBA as well. Players and the players wanted amount of tactical detail in their breaks. They didn't want and they didn't feel like they needed the given Sunday go up and at the motivation kind of stuff. Which I thought was quite interesting because I think sometimes we feel like it's the other way around. That we have to be cheerleader and motivator. I'm not sure that's entirely the case, and I'm not sure that a 43-year-old man knows how to get into the mind of, of an 11-year-old kid or 15, 11-year-old kids to be able to do that as effectively as we want. Player-led stuff is almost is always the better one. You know, if the same outcome was player-led versus coach-led. I think it ends up being a better version of it.
Yeah.
One of the things I used to cheat a little bit, and this is a bit of a cheat code for anyone else. I used to intentionally lean into the players' conversations that they were having as we come off the pitch. So you know, it was never me darting into the changing room to draw up a master plan. It was always sort of listening, reading the temperature of the room. Probably asking a question to start with, even if it's quite broad, like, what do you think of the first half, or whatever it might be, just to get conversations going. And listen, the best version of player led is they land on something that's really good because their peers have come up with it. You know, buy-in is good. The problem is if you've got kind of differing opinion with something, and I guess you don't particularly want your players making substitutions based on poor performance or, you know what I mean, their opinion of poor performance and things like that. So I think you would, you know, the coaches, I think good player-led environments will always have, you know, a coach as a quarterback of it in a sense. And the more, I guess, the more specific the question for the players to lead on something, then the better, rather than what do we need to do in this game, and you know, you figure it out kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's loads of layers to it.
I wonder if it's better, and I don't do this. I mean, we do make it more player oriented, so we'll ask the players questions, but we're still leading that conversation in many ways. I wonder if I'd be better off just kind of when the players come in at half time, just, and this is a standard thing, right? You know, they have 5 minutes, two minutes or so to discuss, you know, first half, what went well, what could be better, you know, and then 2 minutes to discuss what we're going to do for the second half, and I just listen to that conversation. So I've got 4 minutes where they're chatting around, having drinks, we're having to be chatting, but we're well, I'm in the back, I'm my like you say, have ears on it, but that hopefully they kind of almost forget that you're there. And so it's more honest and open, and you will get your quiet ones and your loud and your dominant ones, but hopefully you create an environment in which everyone feels like they've got a voice that triggers that. And then I'll have my own views, obviously, and I'm sure the assistant coach will too, but we'll be able to qualify that accordingly to what we're hearing as well. And then it's a case, right, then the real trick now is, right, how do we, take on board what they've said, and we may be surprised by some of the things that they've seen or said because we may have missed it, or we might not agree or whatever that, and that's fine. But then it's a case of, right, we've got to be cute then about how we find our, way about the key messages we send forward. But would that sound like, a measured starting point? I know we haven't got long at half time, but that's probably 4 minutes of there. And actually, it'll probably be less than that because people don't need that long, do they? Usually, it's like a minute chat.
I think that the time, the length of time for your half time is a factor in it as well, because certainly when I started coaching, I felt like they needed to hear my voice from the start to the end. The more the merrier, and if I didn't do that, I hadn't paced myself well enough, or I hadn't given enough information or something like that. I mean, I think if there was, if an Eamon Devlin was in the room, or someone else who'd gone down the communication rabbit hole, they'd probably be telling you that three pieces of information is enough for players to carry forward an action. I think that's a number most people would land on. Whereas if we all think back, we kind of go off the cuff and we end up listing stuff that's maybe gone wrong, or whatever the case may be, and then wonder why it doesn't stick out the other side of it. And we need to also remember that there's 15 or 20 potentially ears on what you're saying. It's not just one group of players hearing something, it is 20 individuals hearing something that will all hear something and tune into something and tune out to something, and
Well,
and everything.
I think that's a great point. Just to say on that, I'll let you carry on, but like, just I think it's the one time maybe where we go very team focused and we forget about the individual and the team talk. I think that's a great point because, like you say, interpretation of the message is what people need to hear. You might have a little word with the player, but I know that I don't do that very. It's very much a team talk. It's not individual, and I wonder if that's one of the mistake, not a mistake, but an opportunity there to improve on, because actually some players might benefit from a 30-second conversation with one player. Maybe better than me having a 5 minute conversation with everybody, potentially.
But like, is it a case of talk to the player beside you and tell him or her what they did well first half, or you have that, and therefore you have 20 different player conversations going on around the room, just you're not the conduit for each and every one, which I think is quite overwhelming potentially. Get around, okay, let's say 11 players for the sake of argument. That's still a lot of players to get around, and probably by the time you're halfway there, it's gone, it's over, it's
You
finished.
can't,
And
exactly.
But yeah, like, take a breath at the start. I think it's important. What something like you said is important, even if it's just take your breath, grab a drink, have a seat, whatever, whatever it is. Those first couple of minutes where, when you think from a player's point of view, heart rate is, you would expect, through the roof, or it's certainly busy. They might be quite emotional because they've just played a period of football. However competitive you want to describe it, it's still not a great place, to start. So having that couple of minutes where you think, they think, or they chat, or you, I don't know, take a step back, whatever the case may be, I think then and then you can get into the guts of what it is you want to do, and then temper that as you go out for the second half. Again, it's about having rehydration and stuff like that is important as well.
Exactly. And having some time, maybe just to be quiet and having some time to think and just, recharge and get your mind set. Some players like some quiet space, don't they? If they had a bit of a dodgy first half, they might want a little bit of time just to reflect before they get told like they've had a dodgy first half, or just get that sense of the conversation. On your point
Remember,
about the three things, I think I remember. Oh, go on. Sorry, Ray.
yeah, sorry, it just sprung to mind there. I had a pal of mine who worked for Arsenal at one point, and I'm going back a long time ago, and he used to talk about Wenger being the first one to come in, and if the players needed or wanted to be angry, they could be angry. If they wanted to have a row, they could have a row. If they wanted to be jolly, they could be jolly. If they wanted to be too jolly, they could be too jolly. And it was like, for the first few minutes, you just be whatever it is you need to be, because there's a reason that you're being it. And then would kind of get on with, okay, second half now, and we'll do A, B, or C. That was quite revolutionary. I remember hearing about it 20 years ago, or whatever, and being, that's quite more. 25 years ago being quite revolutionary, that people feel the way they feel for a reason. So you let that out of their system and then go from there.
I can't remember who said it, but back to your point on the three things, and I think, I mean, I thought I'm a big fan of just three words, three messages, whatever else. But I think it was kind of the three things were: what are we going to stop doing, what are we going to keep doing, and what are we going to start doing. And it's, that's quite a nice way to summarize those. So, I mean, again, it doesn't always fit in, does it? Each team talk.
No.
Sometimes it's nice as an idea, but if you're not sure, it's not a bad thing. It's okay. We know what we're doing well. We keep doing it. What are we going to not do well? We're going to stop doing, and what can we do even more of? But also recognizing the fact that you're playing a different game second half. It's not that you're not playing the first half again. So, you're going to have your substitutions on both sides. Things are going to change. People get tired. So I think it's all, to your first point you made about not looking necessarily back so much, but looking forward. But I guess having three things wrapped around that probably isn't a bad place if you don't know where to go.
Yeah, I think so. And praising, what do we do with kids? We praise, and if this works with adults as well, if you want them to do something, you praise them for doing it in the first place. So first half you kept the ball really, in the moments where you kept the ball really well, you did this. So second half, can we lead into that? Or using the first reference point for the second half, I think is illogical, because that's your situation in that moment. To sort of loop back onto Zach's point, just to make sure that we do actually, or I do actually answer, or I get somewhere to answer his question.
Wait a minute,
Yeah, like
honestly, yeah.
I suppose, like I was thinking about this morning, and the easiest thing would be to do 50 different things because you want to make a stamp on it. But I was thinking, well, if you do find yourself in that situation, select one thing you want to do, and whether that's, like I say, trial a formation, or whether it's to put some sort of constraint on your players in the game. Just be careful what that looks like, I would suggest. And yeah, have some sort of fingerprints on it, and it's purely because he doesn't want to let just an opportunity for a match play just to ebb away, and kind of not be significant enough.
Oh, all I would say, Ray, maybe I'm thinking aloud now, maybe the score doesn't matter. Like, maybe it's not the score that matters because you can't control that. Maybe it's looking, okay, why have we got where we've got to? And then anticipating what might happen next with regard. I mean, you're guessing to some extent, unless you know the teams very well and whatever else. But maybe the trick is not thinking about the score, because actually you could be thrown up at half time but played pretty badly. You could be 1-0 down but played quite well. So maybe it's about focusing, forget about the score a little bit, but what are we doing well again? What's working? What might change second half? We have to think about, and how are we going to do that, and how are we going to keep playing our game to our principles. And almost again, I don't know answer that question. You've answered it better than I can answer it. But I think maybe the trick is not thinking about the scoreline and trying to stay as focused as the coaches on actually performance and individual, what we're doing well, like as a team and individually, and where might things change moving forward.
Yeah, and I would suggest doubling down on something that's a philosophy, for want of a better word, around that. If it should be something significant for your group rather than just something that's kind of just put out there. If you're, yeah.
You make a good point. Maybe the other thing is how you've started off, right? So we're forgetting about there would have been a start to this game. And what I think, which I quite like, we do, we will always have our focus for the match. So we'll have three things that are focused on the match. They change slightly depending on the kind of type of game it is and whatever else. But there are three things, and we measure about that. So we'll talk at half time, okay, how are we doing against point one, point two? So we sometimes have winning mentality, play our football, big game moments, or we might have attitude, ability. We'll have things that we know we talk about a lot, but that's our reference point. So we can go back to that. So maybe for Zach,
Exactly.
it's don't use the score, use that, and then we can link that to why the score is what the score is, because of maybe things we're doing well or we need to improve on.
Absolutely. And doubling down on the important things in your environment is never a bad thing, is it?
No.
Just puts a point back on it. And that could be it could be a million things, but why not be how many entries to the final third, or
Yeah.
and when we're attacking, can we turn into a 3-2-5 or whatever it is? It depends on a lot of things, obviously. For some coaches, they might be listening to this one, but just go out and enjoy it and play the game, and
Yeah,
it's the game that's in
yeah.
front of you, and that's part of the development. So let's not
But that's a
overthink
good
it.
point as well, right? Isn't it? Maybe it's linking it back to training as well. It's like what we spoke about, what we've been doing, So again, trying to build those links back into your philosophy, your game model, what you've done in training, because even if you've got an under six team out there, you're not gonna have a rallying halftime team talk because the scores are, but you might say, well, lads, we worked on, or girls, we worked on this on Thursday, really good, well done for that. I'm saying that, keep doing that, taking on your players and being brave on the ball. And so maybe it's about just having those conversations and not getting drawn into the game as much, but actually what's the game there to do? Because you can't control the score. So what have you been talking about working on? And if it's under 21s, maybe it is about more detailed, structure, patterns of play, whatever it might be, or just principles and ideas. But maybe that's the trick here, to link it back, like you said, anchor it back to something that's bigger than than just the result.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, look, we can over and back this all day.
Yeah,
It's logical. It could be
well,
psychological, couldn't it? It could be a social thing. It could be really good teammate.
absolutely.
Be a really good winner for the next 40, 45, 20 minutes, whatever.
Well,
But yeah, it's
if
got
Zach's
to
winning at half time his next game and he's losing by full time, he can blame us.
just to lose the episode.
On a slight, just before we move on to the next question, which we'll do literally in a minute, but just one side point. What's your views on substitutes? And the thing is, slightly older players, 16s, 18s, and over probably. So substitutes staying out for half time and not coming back in. My lads played under 18s this season. It's the first time I've really seen it, to be around it a little bit, but the subs will stay out and the other lads are going, I don't know that I kind of get it because you want them to kick a ball and be, but I also would want them in that room having a bit of a conversation. So I don't know if there's an answer to this, but it seems to be quite common practice over here that that's what all the teams do. They'll stay out just on the pitch for the 10 minutes while the other lads go inside. I don't know if you've got any views on that.
Yeah, I do, but I don't know what the right view is necessarily. There are times I've been in, and maybe this is where the conversation between kids football and sort of youth and adult football starts to separate a little bit, because certainly with kids football, you would want them, if they aren't going to come on, you'd certainly want them out and about with the ball and doing whatever it is that you'll have them do at half time. With older players, I feel certainly if you're in pinch moments, where it's a decisive moment in the game, half time, where there's changes or a change of plan or a change of whatever, something significant, then having the right people in the room will be important. We've also had it as well where you take some in and you leave some out because of maybe some changes you're going to make, or you're going to talk about, I don't know, something that's more relevant to the centre back that's on the bench who will need to come on and figure that out, or whatever the case may be. I've had it where everyone's come in, had it where none have, and don't know if any of them are completely right or completely wrong. I would say we have tried to catch them up. Or relevant people catching them up once you're back out, or having others do that as well. So yeah, my opinions, it probably come down to individual matches probably that I've been involved in, where you go, why didn't I bring him in at half time as well? Because that would have been really useful rather than figuring out on the fly. But yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, interesting. Brilliant. We've definitely covered it. Thank you. Okay, next question. This could be a podcast in itself as well. So you're going to have to do work to get it out. It's like less than 15 minutes, but let's play it. So this is from Jonathan, who's based out in Dublin, but I'll play the question.
I have one, right? If that's all right, it's not necessarily a hot topic, but it's opposed training versus unopposed training. How often do you recommend, or do you not recommend, using unopposed training at all? Does it have a place in development? I know opposed training very much does. To learn skills under pressure. But yeah, I'd like to see people's opinion on opposed versus unopposed training.
So this one's been battered around for a long time, probably, and look, I won't say too much for you. I'll let you jump in this one first. But j all I will say is that my view has definitely swung around on this, and I think understanding what actually unopposed means, I think, is the key to answering. So in my view, answering this, and there's no probably better ambassador than this than Sol, who does a lot of work around this. I think he's got a great podcast, and there's not, obviously, he's been doing this for years. And I think Sol was one of our earlier podcasts when we first started, and I think he would say himself that maybe the position that we took around unopposed practice was almost a little bit like polarized, where it was either you have to do it or it's rubbish, you know. And Sol was obviously a big ambassador for you have to do it, but I think actually what we've all learned is it's what you what unopposed actually is, and you know what it looks like in practice compared to you know what people maybe think it is, and also how much time you have with players, right? Because again, that there's that to it. But just broadly then, it's a great question by Jonathan, and I think you know it's good that it comes around again. But what's your thoughts on that?
I think he said at the start of the message it wasn't topical. I think it always is. I think it's always a great topic to chew around. I always want to be the middle person in this conversation, just to read the room sometimes, because people get very, very opinionated
Passionate,
on it.
yeah.
And myself, actually myself included, Scott, there's five, I wrote five deliberate soccer practice books that were based loosely around this very question, or certainly the question of game related, and what does game related look like. So I think we could start talking about several different things that surround this quite broad question. You know, the reductionist says do unopposed, don't do unopposed, whereas I think there's nuance all the way through. So if you are a kid with a ball against the wall and you're practicing whatever, you may not you might not necessarily be practicing, you might just be playing with the ball, you know what I mean? But it's helping a first touch, or it's helping, you know, a million different things that we could talk about. So unopposed in that situation is to be lauded. You know, I love seeing my kid out on his own in the back, just him and the ball, doing whatever, his twists and turns and hitting the net. Where I think it becomes really difficult is in a team environment. And what does that unopposed team environment, team training environment look like? Is it 60 minutes of players standing in lines and queues and moving from one cone to the next? If it is, then that's where I would be really sort of I would have a lot to say about it, and none of it good. If you're talking about opposed being instead of doing laps of the pitch as a warm-up, we're going to get the balls out and we're going to warm up with the balls, then I would think that's a great way of, that's a much better way. I quite like being efficient, you know. So if you can warm up and use the ball, great, you know, that's, we're already ahead of ourselves in terms of our development. If we're using the ball instead of just running laps of the pitch, for example. I do think that when we talk about, here's a question for you then, Scott, and this won't challenge you, don't worry. If you were practicing a penalty kick and you didn't have a goalkeeper, would that change how you practice it?
That I think that's a great question, and I think I would answer this differently now than I would have done maybe just a year or two ago, certainly 5 years ago. I would have said, what a waste of time practicing pens without a goalkeeper would have been my you know original Scott answer. I genuinely think now that I think practicing pen without a keeper would be absolutely fine. Actually, practicing being coached to take a penalty, I should say, without a keeper, I think it'd be fine if the coach knows what they're coaching you.
Okay,
So,
good.
I think if I was a really good coach about penalty taking or ball striking, then I could add some value to that. I think I could. I'm not, so I need to put a keeper in there because actually that's probably helping me help them get better. You know, so I think if you're a really good in possession coach, unopposed or opposed. If you can add value is my thing. And I think I've got out of a lot of things as a coach because I'm not that great technically about things. So I add in constraints or games to help work on some of those things to kind of under to fill where my gaps are a little bit, I would say, if that
Yeah, love
answers.
it. Yeah, it does answer. It answers it really well, because what you're saying there is, okay, if we're going to drill down, I use the word drill intentionally. So if you're going to drill down into something really specific, so if it's a penalty kick, or if it's me standing 10 yards from you and we're going to pass the ball over and back, if we're going to drill down into something specific that you know something about, and that might be what's now kind of out of fashion, but in terms of tech, you know, standing position and footwear, I don't coach in that way, so therefore I don't drill down like that. Now, it might be an unopposed game where you have, let's say we're at Manchester City's training ground this morning, and they put the two centre backs on the halfway line, They put a full back out wide and a full back inside, and they put a winger outside and a full back inside, and then they, I don't know, it's that 2-3-5 situation that they end up in. And after 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 passes, there's someone in the half space, as they call it, cutting it back for Haaland to finish. You would go, well, that kind of hooks on to what you'll do on Saturday. That literally connects to the game you're playing. Now, they're all good enough and understandable enough that they will know that to play 15 passes like it was transcripted, like it was prescribed, you have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's not going to work. But what we can do is just bed in some ideas that when we end up here in this part of the pitch, this is what we're looking for. This is something like that. Now, that's very, very difficult to do in the vast majority of environments that our listeners will be talking about. And if you don't feel like you want to coach technique, as in like standing foot or follow through, all that sort of stuff, if you're not quite sure, then I think you can move on from it quicker. There's, for me, you could break up, and I think it's very important actually that you break unopposed into two. And it's what I call in my books, and the FA would call it a constant and variable, right? So the constant unopposed practices in a team environment, right? I'm not talking about a one-on-one session where you're getting loads of specific repetition with specific guidance like Saul would do. I'm talking about when there's 15 of you and you're in a queue to shoot on goal, or you're just passing from cone to cone. That constant environment is very hard to hook onto the game, you know, and often you see coaches do this and then wonder why the game gets ahead of their players on a Saturday. You know, oh, we've, you know, we passed really well in training, but now they, you know, because football is a busy, random place, chaotic place at times. Now, if you have unopposed practice where you would have what I would call interference with what they're trying to do. So I'm trying to pass to you, Scott, because you're over the other end of a grid. There's people running past and getting in the way, and you know, maybe I would need an extra touch and I would have to pass the ball a little bit harder for you to get to you. Suddenly I'm making a football decision there. Or I have to pass it a little bit earlier, a little bit quicker, a little bit softer, a little bit higher, a little bit swervier, a little bit whatever. Maybe I have to down the pass to you to pass somewhere else. Suddenly I'm in, you know, I'm embedding that pass within a whole heap of football things. Do you know what I mean? And there's no big queue behind me. If we're all doing that, you know, if you've got 15 players and there's five balls or six balls or something like that in a grid like that, there's so much more outcomes, football outcomes. And it's not quite opposed because the other people, they're just interfering rather than trying to get the ball from you. Just to kind of put a bow on, hope to put a bow on it, you know, the penalty idea, when we think of taking that penalty without a goalkeeper, if you ask the kid to do that just to score, then the safest thing would be to roll it down the middle, and put it
So we're
into
never doing it in an actual situation, right? Yeah. So it's
the safe
become,
place.
yeah.
But what we're also taking out of that is we're taking out the reference point of the goalkeeper. So that could be a hundred things in terms of it might be their size, it might be the little battle of wits that you need to have, it might be the disguise that you now use. So I can hit the side netting without a goalkeeper in there, but with the goalkeeper, can I hit the side netting whilst adding some disguise to what I'm trying to do? Because that's what it's all part of. If he takes a step to the right, what am I doing now? Do you know what I mean? Do I have to hit it a little bit harder? Or whatever the case may be. So I think, and a penalty is quite a closed environment. You know, it's always going to be 12 yards from goal. The ball is always going to be still. You'll always have 5 or 10 seconds to compose yourself, which normal football doesn't give you. You know, if you practice free kicks without a wall, you were thinking you're missing a big reference point there. One that helps you because a wall helps you. It's a great constraint in itself where you go, right, I've got to hit that part of the goal or else I'm in trouble. So I
I
think.
love using your penalty example to think about this. I never thought about it that way before, but even now I'm thinking, and again, I'm probably completely wrong here, but I think people would say, well, does a keeper make any difference whatsoever? If you're a great penalty taker, it doesn't matter about a keeper, does it? Just put it where you want to put it. If you can put it where you want to put it each time you take a penalty, and that's unsavable because if, let's be honest, you put it in the top right or left corner each time you take a penalty, probably no keeper saving it. So what do you need the keeper for? I mean, again, I think your points are valid about, psychological, just the presence, all that
Nobody
stuff.
would
Suddenly
miss.
that corner looks a bit smaller, doesn't it? When there's a keeper standing there and when there's not a keeper standing there, even if you can hit the same spot,
Absolutely.
it just looks a little bit different.
Absolutely. And listen, when it's sorry to labor on it, but if you take the best football players that have ever lived, that can put the ball in the same spot over and over again, even from 12 yards, that's quite the skill. That's not as easy as it sounds. And they miss, that happens. So we know it's more than that. And I don't want to guess, kind of, I don't want to feel like we're sticking on that analogy too much either. My point is that the goalkeeper gives you really important reference points, just like other players give you really important reference points in the game of what you want to do. So if you're on opposed sessions, for me, there's two. Is one might certainly be replacing a non-ball warm-up with a technical warm-up of some type. If that can be a variable version of it, then for me, over time, their development should get better in that closed cone-to-cone one. And if there's other times you're doing it should hook onto the game. So it should be your central midfielder, and this is for older players. Your central midfielder, you get the ball from the right back, and you're gonna open up, switch it out to the other side, and then we're gonna cross and finish or something like that, whilst accepting that thing. So if you can do that with an opponent, then you know what I mean. You start to put in real game and then make real decisions off the back of it.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the point of how much time have the players, I think, as well, doesn't it? So if you've got them 3 times a week, I think, you've got a good case there for doing a good amount of unopposed practice or some constant practice, or some slightly rare practice where you actually can work on things because you've got them for a lot. If you've got them for an hour and a half every week, I think you probably don't want to spend half an hour doing unopposed stuff personally, because that may not be the best use of the hour and a half, because an hour and a half goes really quickly. One structure I really like, and we try and do it, we don't do it all the time, but we try and do it. But I think if you're trying to get a balance between unopposed, opposed practices, where it's the whole part whole, where I like starting off with a game where you've got a 7v7, 8v8, they're just playing. You add in maybe some constraints that are themed around, for the theme you're working on. So that kind of builds in. So the game starts normally 5, 10 minutes. Then you add in some constraints, 5, 10 minutes. Then you stop. You go into a part practice where you work on some technical stuff. And that could be random. It could be constant or it could be variable. It might be the whole group doing it. You might have some doing some, and then maybe the core player doing something a bit different if you've got a coach or two that can help you out. And that might be 15 minutes or so. So you've kind of done your whole, added in some constraints after a few minutes, you've done your part, then you go back into a hole again with the constraints back in there, and then you take the constraints off for the end. So you've kind of got this flow through it where you're doing a bit of everything. Now, well, everything is probably not the right phrase to doing it. How much the technical practice is going to do in 15, 20, a half an hour, one session is very questionable, right? However good or not I might be as a coach on my technical detail, but if you repeat that again and you're going back in that again, you're affecting back into the session and later sessions, then I think that's a nice package in which you're kind of covering a fair bit there individually and collectively. Does that sound like it's got some legs?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't disagree. And to your point, I think the one of the most significant things you said there was about the idea of this kind of, I like to say it aggregates over time. So if you do a ball mastery session for 15 minutes with a load of players, are they going to be better with the ball this Saturday? It's like going to the gym or something like that. You would suggest not. They might be. They might not be. They might. There's loads of variance in this thing. They might be that confident with the ball that they lose it a lot or something like that. But my point is, if you are practicing more with the ball under game circumstances, then over time you get used to those circumstances. There's not a single player that, when I've read their autobiography, that turns around and says, I became a better player because of all those passing drills we used to do. They used to say things like, "Well, actually, me and my mates used to go down to the cage, or we used to have a street football to play matches. I used to play against my older." I think we've spoke about this in previous episodes. So I think there's a bit of a tell there. Now, you might have in a one-to-one environment, which I don't think I've been clear about in the past as well, because it's not my environment. But if you're in that one environment, one-to-one environment, and it's been that specific that it's carried you know what I mean? I don't know, a winger chopping inside or something like that, that's been picked up specifically because of some cues left in a one-to-one environment. That's different than me coaching you, Scott, one-to-one, while there's 15 other kids lined up behind us, because that's a waste of time. Now, the last thing I don't I've heard Peter Prickett mention ball ratio before, and I've been banging the ball ratio drum for a long time, and that's simply looking at your practices and goals. Well, how many balls are moving compared to how many players you have, and are they all involved? And I think that's a really good way of looking at it, because you could have an 11v11 training session with one ball and 22 players, so it's going to be obviously far less technical and far more tactical than it would do. Or you could have that ball mastery where there's one player on the ball and you're getting the amount of touches. Think
Well,
about
that
that.
I was going
Think
to on
about
that
it.
one, because you've mentioned before about ball rolling time, haven't you? Like that was a bit, so that's almost like an evolution for that, and I've not really thought about ball ratio. Like, I think that's a great way of looking at it. If you want to have good maximum ball rolling time, that's brilliant. But actually, that's great as a group. But actually, if you look at your ball ratio as well alongside that, then maybe you're going to be really, ensuring that your players are getting an opportunity to develop with the ball, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I asked the question in a webinar of mine before. We had a diagram of the shooting lines that would be quite common. So if there's, let's be kind, let's say there's 10 players, they have a ball each and they're in a queue to shoot on goal. What's the ball ratio of that? And they go, well, everyone has a ball. Well, actually, they don't, because only one is going to play with it at any given moment. So you're kind of down to 10%. My math is probably,
Straight away.
to be challenged.
But the funny thing
But
there is, when you see the coach, then they're doing the 1-2s, don't you? So they'll play to the coach, he'll set and they'll shoot that one there, which does my head in, to be honest with you. You think, well, after 5 minutes of that or 2 minutes of that, the coach said probably 200 touches, and each boy's probably had, or players had, like, two touches each. It's like he's getting his little 1-2s worth. He's not even playing. He's getting more touches of the ball. I do understand it. Well, we do a variation of that before games where the boys play to each other and then they kind of feed. So, like, we're out of it. We're just there and they're doing some ball striking. But yeah, you don't, you can get, when you're the coach, I guess you can get lost looking at the whole practice, that's really good, and not look at the individual within their practice and think, actually, what are they getting out of it?
Absolutely. And look, if at any given moment there's one ball that's live, right, and there is 10, 15 players, whatever the case may be, if only one ball is live, then it shouldn't be a technical practice. It shouldn't be about shooting, because, in my eyes at least, because you're not going to be able to drill down into it enough. They're not going to get enough repetition or practice over it. They might get, what, two or three in any given moment. A low ball ratio like that should be something tactical, where at least if it's tactical or game based, if you've got the ball the whole time, Scott, you're dribbling, I've still got to do something. I've still got to react to the game. I've still got to take up my position, whether I'm with you or against you. I still have to take up my position off the back of what you're doing with the ball.
Absolutely.
Development in itself.
One final question on that one. We spoke about Sol a couple of times, so just to mention, I'm sure people m will know his podcast, but just in case you're not familiar with it, it's My Personal Football Coach, which is a fantastic podcast. Sol's done it for years. He's kind of really fine-tuned the conversation around this, so check it out, because obviously he's an ambassador for one side of that argument. But I will say about Sol is, I think what he's managed to do is position that argument much more broadly and accommodating. So he's not anti-opposed and he's not anti-constraints. He just recognised that this is part of the football diet, and done well, it's an important part of it. And I think I would certainly agree with that. I listened to his podcast today, actually, and one thing, I'm sure it's his podcast, I could be wrong, I'm pretty sure it's his one, but I think he said, and I'm not aware of it being wrong, that there is no official qualification for coaches to do like a technical qualification. So we get a technical coach, you know, so to coach technique, which I'm not aware of one, so I'm pretty sure he's probably correct. He knows more about this world than I do. But that seems like, again, like, you know, maybe a dangerous space to be in, where we've gone very games based, which I love and I'm all for, because it definitely suits my coaching style and my abilities. But you know, there are coaches out there that know about the angle of, you know, the angle of the ankle to receive a pass, and that little things I've got no idea, and just little things about how you move your shoulders and how you like, just things that aren't covered anymore on coaching courses, which, you know, I wonder if that, you know, if that is gonna is a problem, and you know, are we therefore, you know, over-relying on games-based approach, where because we haven't got the technical coaches that can do it, and we need more of those? Is that part of the problem to solving this?
Yeah, look, I kind of sit one side of the argument where, like, I'm showing my age now, but if I see Xabi Alonso hit a 45-yard diagonal, I know it's Xabi Alonso because of the way he plays and the way his body moves, versus a Steven Gerrard, versus a whoever else, Frank Lampard, because technique, in my eyes, is functional. It's how do I get the ball from here to there effectively, rather than being kind of robotic, right? So I have my issues with the angle of the foot and all that. Will I coach from a technical point of view things like, next time lock your ankle, or you need to head it down, can you have a softer touch, things like that. But I think they exist within a much broader spectrum of movement skills and patterns, and what players see and what they can execute, and things like that. So I think it's quite a complex one. The only qualification that I'm aware of around technical work would be Kerber, who would have been in this space, kind of probably the first ones in the space since whatever the 80s or 90s. But even they talk about small group training and group training and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I don't know if the lack of technical coaches is the problem necessarily. I think it's the amount of technical work that's done unopposed, when we really could be moving the needle a little bit more. When you take opposition away, the game changes. So why are you taking it away? Are you doing it just because you want to warm up? Are you doing it because you want to practice something? If so, great. But it should be practice. It shouldn't be cues and things like that.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't probably ask the question correctly. I'm thinking, rethinking it now. I guess what I'm trying to say is it because we don't have maybe enough really good technical coaches that we almost don't value it as well as we should? Because like, I'm not saying there's not good coach out there, but I've only ever seen like a few during my time that are actually really good, that I would recognize as good technical coaches. Not there's not more about there, but I haven't seen any. I haven't seen even trying to be technical coaches. So I wonder if we just haven't got enough to say, oh, what, well, we don't know what we're missing, because actually we don't see enough of it. We're actually, if we had more, but oh, that's really good. And that could, and how do we get that as part of our, you know, part of our whole football kind of diet for the week or whatever it might be, adding that in, because we just don't know what we haven't got, really. But it's a very broad and open question, and we've got one more to get through if we've got time. Should we do one more? And I want this
Definitely.
one, because I really want this, because
Yeah,
I'm
me
so
too.
glad you got it, because it's a really good one. So I'm good. Thank you for that, and thank you for joining from sending in a question about that. Again, another whole podcast episode in itself, but I hope we touched on some of the stuff to keep people thinking. So the final one is from Adam from Saffron Walden, and it's one of his under 11 players, I think, speaking, isn't it? Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. All right, so let's listen to the lad, and we'll chat about this again. It's really timely.
You and Johnny are in charge. Have you come around the corner? Okay, so you can start with what is the plan and what we're doing.
Okay, so this is basically what we got from Adam's wonderful resources. So we're playing a high pressuring with a build up. We're going to play through the middle, as we don't have as many wide players today. We're going to short passes, like a lot of them, like tiki-taka football, like FC Barcelona. closing down, we want to prevent short, like, goalkeeper solutions. If the goalkeeper has it, like a goal kick, or if the goalkeeper has it, the cams and the striker come in as our front three, and the defenders come back to form like a high line. And then we try and make the goalkeeper go long instead of short. Doing the stuff. So we're not playing as tight marking. And there's a lot of creative freedom as well.
Love it. Well, right, the first thing to say is the fact that after, I don't know, 120 odd episodes of this podcast, we have not had enough of the actual players speaking themselves. And for that, I think there was two lads on there. I think the one lad got a little bit of words in towards the end there. It's like trying to do it something with me when you get a couple of words in towards the end because I don't shut up. But thank you so much to Adam and for those wonderful lads for being one of the first, I think, to actually have their voice on the podcast and a player's perspective, which is the most important perspective we have.
Definitely.
I've got some views on this. Look, I love it, but I've got some views on it that you maybe have a little, look at as well, just to be sure that we're aligned on this in the sense of, what's right about that and the good stuff. But just if you don't mind, Ray, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, look, it's kind of heartwarming, isn't it, when you hear kids talking and taking the lead like that. And I suppose, I don't know how many people will listen to this. I think maybe every coach might take away something a little bit different from that clip than others. I took away the kind of the need sometimes for coaches just to get out of the way a little bit and just, let the sailors control the ship, so to speak, and just see what they come up with. You listen to that, you listen to, well, he's probably 10 or 11 years old. It's quite some of the details. This is where it's kind of interesting, that some of the details he talks about are quite tactical things, but it's in kids' language. And a mentor of mine a long time ago said to me, with players, with any group of players, you find them where they are and you take them from there. And I just thought it would be so interesting to hear the context of that kid's football, because I don't think every 10 or 11 year old should be able to speak like that anyway. Because so if you think if any coaches listening think their team is deficient because they don't have that, I really wouldn't, because I do think that's modeled really highly. But whether all those kind of he does say some tactical things, creative freedom in there, and I love the way. But what I like about the kids' version of what we think, like we think about build up and the tactical game in possession as breaking lines and rest defense and all that sort of stuff. They're thinking about the technical parts, or lots of little short passes and things like that. So it's quite in it will be quite interesting to see that kid's background. Like this, you'll laugh at this, but does he play FIFA? Is that where the cams thing come from? What does he watch on YouTube? What games does he watch at the weekend? What influences does he, does he pick up a match of the day on the Saturday night and hear them talking about high press and the keeper kicking it long and things like that? Because I know for a fact in that environment it would have been a very technical heavy environment as he progressed through. So yeah, heartwarming, and I would like to think that could inspire coaches not to try get the kids to talk like that necessarily, but to just step to the side and go, right, today, and that was match day, wasn't it? You know what I mean? Like, get out of the way, let them plan it and see what they come up with.
Well, I don't obviously better than I would on this one, but I didn't get an impression from that clip that at any point, this is not Adam telling this kid what to say. This is this kid taking the message heard and him like just giving his version of it like that,
Yeah.
which was sincere. It was passionate. It was enthusiastic. It was detailed for the age they're at. Like it was beautiful. Like and it makes you smile. It really does. But I'm glad you mentioned the point because I think the slight danger to this is, and I know there'd be some people out there saying, oh, the kid's 10, 11. He shouldn't have mentioned build up or he should have mentioned high press. They shouldn't be in his vocabulary. They should be doing that. It's like, well, hold on a minute. We don't know what age, so what stage these players are at. Some might have played for 3 months, some might have been playing for 5 years by then. Do you know what I mean? And they're ready for more detailed stuff. You don't know how much passion this kid has for the game and the knowledge and the stuff like that. So why do we make them wait if they're hungry for it now? Let's feed them. And I would be quietly confident that if Adam's gone to that level of creating that environment in which he's getting those kind of players and those kind of things at that age, he's probably also doing a lot of great work with regards to technical and physical stuff. So it's not, he's not relying on his tactical ability for these kids to go and beat teams. That's on a foundation of wonderful technical and physical practice as well, which I'm guessing here, but I don't believe that you'd get a kid speaking that without that foundation underneath it as
Yeah.
well.
The thing is, if you give kids the floor, you lose control of what's going to come out of their mouth. You know what I mean? And
That's why we don't do it very often.
yeah, probably, yeah. And that's probably why people do shy away from it. But it's quite interesting that he's come out with it. And we've got to accept that this is pre-match as well. You know, it's a match plan or whatever the terminology used were.
We have to get the
So
kid post-match, see what that actually plays out in
yeah.
practice.
But yeah, and I think that's the important part of it is that, like, if you are doing a pre-match thing, it is going to sound match-like, isn't it? You know
Of
what I mean?
course,
And like you could unpick what exactly he would understand about build-up, and it's obviously or high press or whatever that might be, and it's going to be a very childlike version of it. And it seemed to roll out quite quickly, so that's why I'm thinking I used to talk a lot when I was abroad about football age and you know what experiences you've had in and around the game, not just your training sessions, but all the rest of it as well, to come up with something like that. I would sincerely hope that other coaches listening to that would lean into trying that more, you know. I
giving the
know
kids a pass.
Wimbledon Academy famously did it or do it a lot, where they have a game week where kids can take control, they do everything. Now, it's got to be done in a challenge and support kind of way. And what I particularly like from the lad in Adam's team there was I'm thinking about the other 10 kids that are listening to him that are probably hanging on every word, maybe even more so than the coaches because of that peer relationship that the
It's much
kind
more powerful, isn't it, coming from
of,
them than it is from
The extra credit when things come from one of us, one of my mates, you know, is that's quite the learning tool because there'll be some in there that'll go, okay, I need to sort that out there. But also the very entry level kind of ideas of lots of short passes and things like that. Yeah, really hard one. We spoke really well, and then you can tell the other kid in the background is also,
Chris last in. Yeah, he was a
yeah.
creative freedom.
Yeah, he was just a prompt, wasn't he? You know, I'll just be the prompter in that.
Like, I just think when you give an example of someone maybe showing like the, I don't know whether this kid is in the team, but like you think that's kind of like us doing really well. Other coaches may get panicking. Oh, we've got to try and we've got to get that answer out. But it's about being at age and stage appropriate. Just work through it, you know. And like I say, even with a bit of some of the comments there about the high press and the build up play, well, we use bed at quite a young age group to build, exploit, devastate. So we're using the same word build there, but the detail we go at maybe under 14s and 15s around that is a lot different. We go in the
Will be
sixes and
different.
sevens, but you're just laying the foundations there and just getting that terminology out, you know. And if you question that kid about build up play to like a professional standard, he's not going to have a clue, and absolutely right that he doesn't, but he's going to know roughly what a build up play means, roughly what that
Absolutely.
might mean in context of their age and the format they play, right?
I'll give you a live one. Last night, literally last night, my 4-year-old, he doesn't turn 5 till for another couple of months. In his mini kickers thing, the coach, and rightly or wrongly, and I'm not, it's not important that we go into it now, but the coach said, spread out or find space or something like that. And because he's heard it a few times before, he know, in a 3v3 situation, he knows what to do. You either go left or right, depending on who has the ball. And he was able to do that. And you think, oh, well, we're really done. You really understand the game. Until one of the opposition players just kind of stood in the way of the pass, like he blocked the passing lane, and then he doesn't understand that. Okay, now I've got a. Do you know what I mean? So you can have, he can tell me that the coach wants him to spread out or find space or make the pitch big. He understands that from a day one level, and he has repeated it, away from the training. But it doesn't mean that there's not layers and layers that need to go on top of that. And it's a kid's version of what he sees football as, and it's as simple as that. And I thought he was so articulate. Yeah, it does. It makes you smile. It makes you smile.
Brilliant. Well, look, thank you so much. Thank you to everyone that contributed. Obviously, thank you to Zach. Thank you to Jonathan. Thanks to Adam. But also, most importantly, thank you to the two lads that jumped on and gave their voices for that. Well done to everyone that's doing such hard work. The Coach's Voice episodes, I love, Ray. I think it's great getting questions from people that are out there doing it all and just and having a chance to bat that around. We're going to try and aim for like a live one at some point. So we'll invite on a bunch of coaches. We'll have a debate. We'll throw some topics out there, and we'll do that hopefully for the end of this season. So that should be a good challenge, I think. Don't you
Yeah,
reckon?
well, I guess that's a podcast equivalent of being player led, right? Give the
Absolutely. Yeah.
listeners the room and the mic and
We have to
see
practice
what
what we preach,
happens.
don't we? Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
absolutely.
Brilliant. But I've really enjoyed that today, Ray. Thank you so much for your time again. We always run over, and that's my fault entirely. But thank you so much for your time. And I hope, are you looking forward to the next one? You've
We'll
got to
see what
say,
happens. Yeah, I
yeah.
suppose so. Yeah, it might be all right.
Brilliant, mate. Well, look, have a great week, and look forward to catching up on the next episode.
Cheers, Scott. Thanks all.
Cheers, Ray. Thanks, mate.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.